Welcome to Real Estate I Love It podcast. I'm Shelley Hoffman, real estate expert and community advisor. Join me and various guests who are expert in what they do, such as home inspectors, mortgage brokers, investors, wholesalers. There are so many aspects to our industry that most people are not aware of, and I'm here to help you learn about them. I'm an educator by trade, and this podcast is to educate you in the world of real estate. Hey, everybody, it's Shelley Hoffman with another episode of Real Estate I Love It. And today I am honored to have Nancy Wallace Lobbs here with me. Hi, Nancy.
Hey, everyone. Hi, Shelley.
Hi. So Nancy reached out to me and she was talking about the way that you invest in real estate and how you love helping other people and sharing stories. So first, tell us all how you got into real estate, because you shared it with me and it was kind of funny.
All right. Well, thanks. And thanks, Shelley, for having me on. I'm really honored to be here. So I do have kind of a funny story. So no matter where you're at in the country right now, I mean, the real estate market is just insane. Like it's a huge buyer's market. I'm actually in the Dallas, Texas area. It's crazy. So I actually started my real estate career back in Phoenix around 2008, when the real estate market was again going insane. And so my husband and I, we looked around and we said, you know, we have kids and all that. And we're like, dang, when can you make this much money? We quit our jobs, sold our house, and within 3 weeks we moved to Dallas. Now, we had some reasons. We were both kind of from the Midwest, and that's kind of what propelled me. Now, let me just tell the audience, I was not in real estate at the time. I just, you know, I always tell people I was kind of greedy, you know, because I saw how much money I could make. And the thing is, in a buyer's market, you can do that if you got a place to go. So we said that. And so that's kind of how we propelled our real estate career, because I was like, dang, okay. And I had always watched, like, you know, those flip and flop shows, and I always had an interest in real estate. I just was nervous and scared. And let me tell you, we sold our home and moved to Dallas from Phoenix to Dallas in 3 weeks. And we thought, you know what, we were both smart people. We just felt like we could get jobs anywhere. And, you know, we did. So it all worked out. I guess the worst case is that we could have rented a camper or whatever. But anyway, that's how I got started. And then
there's always a reason. There's always a place to go. But I want to go back, because you said a buyer's market twice. It's a seller's market.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, a seller's market. I want to be a buyer, but yes, it's a seller's market. Thank you. Yes, it's a crazy seller's market. So when you homestead, you know, you don't pay income taxes on that, right? So it's basically money that, you know, if you can sell your home and you have an alternative place, the problem that people end up as a seller is that, where are you going to go? And when we looked in Phoenix, we actually had been in our house for like 8 years, and we were just kind of looking for another house. And we were like, oh my gosh, we cannot afford what we already have. So it's kind of funny, because real estate does go in ups and downs. So we just happen to be in another huge seller's market right now. Huge. Oh my gosh. So, but that's how I got started. And I never looked back, and I love real estate. I love your podcast, because you said, you know, you love real estate. I'm so passionate about real estate. And being a real estate broker, I mean, it's been a journey. And I've learned some other ways to invest in real estate that are, you know, I have bought off of the MLS and all of that. But I'm a real estate investor. And so we always look for deals.
Right. So. And this is a tough market, right, to find a deal in if you're a real estate
investor. It is. You know, we've actually had to go to secondary markets, because I would love to say that I'm, you know, doing real estate deals in my own backyard, but I'm not, because it's just so competitive. And you have other investors that are paying over. So we're kind of, you know, holding on that in the Dallas market, because, to be smart about it, if the numbers don't work, the numbers don't work, you know, and you just got to move on. So we like secondary markets. What that means is it's about, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours outside of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. There's still affordable housing. And the thing is, Dallas as a metroplex is growing. So it's going out anyway. So there's still deals to be had. You know, it's just funny when you talk to a seller and they're like, oh, well, do you want to see this house? And it, you know, it's a 3-bedroom, 2-bath. and this probably won't make sense in if you know, in New York State, but you know, Dallas, I have actually, I'll talk about my first deal here in a second and a creative way I bought it. But you know, I typically look for homes that are under 250,000 with a after repair value, like the top, you know, market. So I'm not, for what the kind of investing I do, I don't go off to the, you know, $500,000 home. So the homes I'm looking for are either going to be a rental or owner finance or something like that. So, but yeah, and I used to, and so I got into property management after we came here, and I was a property manager for well over a decade. I don't do that anymore, but man, did I learn a lot in that field.
Absolutely. Yeah. So tell us how you went about either your first deal or your favorite deal that you think would help our.
I'm going to talk one that has really kind of made me a little famous. So there's a guy named Ken Corsini, and he wrote a book called The Best Real Estate Deals That Shaped Experts, Investors, and it's called Profit Like a Pro. So he had heard about this deal I did. So for your viewers, what I want to say is that I do marketing for distressed properties. So I usually look for people that, you know, it's a vacant home, a distress, some distress, a lifestyle situation. You know, people are downsizing with their parents, putting them in nursing homes, and probate. So I did a mailing. It was just a simple postcard, said, hey, I want to buy your house. You know, wasn't anything fancy, didn't have my picture on or anything. And this guy called me, and he had a house in downtown historic Fort Worth, which if you've ever invested or tried to buy in a historic district, there's a lot of rules. Like if you have a property there that you know, the paint has to be a certain way and the decoration. So anyway, and his property had been sitting for about 5 years vacant. Mm-hmm. I think it was a little bit longer, but it had been in his family for, he was actually born in the home. It was built in 1920 or 1930. It was an old house, which is not typically what I buy, but he only wanted $10,000 for the house, which I knew the area. I knew that was a good deal. I didn't know what I was going to do with it. So we had talked on the phone, and I got it under contract sight unseen. Like I just said, hey, I'm offering you 10. He was good with it. Now, let me back up. I was not the first investor to talk to this guy. We just hit it off because, you know, we were talking about football and my husband's from Wisconsin, Green Bay. and we just hit it off. And so he told me it was his family home. I asked him about his family. And I think that's where kind of investors miss the mark. They're just so like, oh, what do you want for your house or whatever?
Right.
So we built this rapport. So I got it under contract. Then I went and looked at the house. And so we were buying it for $10,000. And so I was like, I had gone to these lunch and learns at our custodial IRA company where I have a self-directed IRA. So I've been self-employed for a long time. So it's not like I have like a, you know, boatload of money in this IRA, the self-directed IRA. I have a SEP and that kind of thing. So they had always been talking about how you can use your self-directed IRA and you don't have to have a lot of money and you can use a small dollar IRA. And I was like, And I had a partner on this deal. So we were paying $10,000. So I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to try this. So I used $5,000 from my Roth self-directed IRA. My partner paid $5,000 in cash. We owned the property through our entities. You know, I had an LLC, he had an LLC. So we owned the property 50-50. So we, you know, that's how we were paying for the property. So there's some paperwork that goes along with that, but it was super simple. So we didn't know what we didn't even see this property. So we go and look at the property, and I'm telling you what, it was split down the middle. The city was okay. It was so bad. The city was getting ready to tear it down, and we had no idea. Like, you know, we could wholesale the lot, and you know, so this was in 2018. So the market hadn't gone quite crazy. So we were like, So we stuck a sign in the yard, handwritten, and it one side said, one side was English, one side was Spanish, owner will finance, and the phone number. 3 days later, we sold that house for $50,000, and we didn't do a thing to it. Not a thing. I mean, so we get to the closing table, and the way our terms worked, if you're not familiar with owner financing, you're basically the bank. So our terms were 20% down, which we got our $10,000 back. So we were made whole, and we financed $40,000 or carried a note for $40,000 for 15 years at 9.5% interest. Nice. Now, since my IRA, Nancy didn't actually own the property, nor did my LLC, my Roth IRA did. So the $5,000 was wired from the custodial company to the title company. So they, you know, did the paperwork. And then when the buyers came in and, you know, purchased it and we closed from the buyer's side, then the $10,000, $5,000 went back to my IRA and my partner got $5,000 in cash. And we always joke about this because now the person that's paying, he pays a monthly payment every month. We put in a loan servicing company, so I don't even touch it. The money goes to the loan servicing company, and then they just send my share, my 50%, to my IRA. So I don't even know what the return on investment is. It's like crazy. I mean, at one time I calculated it was like 114%, and I showed somebody the deal, and they're like, oh, that's way more than that. But basically, my IRA has grown. Like the value of it is over. Now, remember, it's half, right? The value of my IRA is over $38,000 just from that one deal. Now, the thing is, we had just opened these accounts. So I'm going to talk about another deal that I did with $100. But the point with a self-directed IRA, if you're someone out there that you're like, I don't really trust the stock market. How can I grow my retirement? This is an excellent way that people don't really know about. And it's super easy once you understand what the paperwork is. You know, there's some steps that you have to use. There's a title company. You have to use a title company that knows what they're doing, because I've used some that didn't quite know what they were doing about it. But it's a great way. So all of that money that's going into my Roth IRA, I don't pay taxes on it. I don't even file a tax return on that part of it. Now, when I do the withdrawal, yes, I will, you know, I'll pay taxes at that point. Now, my partner, so the money that he's getting, he decided just to do cash. So he pays, now granted, on that kind of a loan, we're not talking about, you know, thousands of dollars a month. It's right. The payment is just under $500. So let's call it five. So I'm getting 250, he's getting 250, but he pays passive income tax on his 250, and mine's just building up my IRA. Pretty cool. So yeah, so it's a great tax deferred saving strategy to grow your retirement account. And the cool thing is it's backed by real estate. Now, fast forward, our guy is still paying. So we're about 3 years into it. The house, when we bought it, remember I said I bought it for $10,000. So we have property taxes here and you can go on the tax rolls. And that house was only valued at, you know, around 14,000, something like that, 12, something like that, very low. Today, if you drive by the property, and I've done presentations, they painted it, they fixed it up. And part of our financing to him was that he had to abide by all of the historic code regulations and restrictions, which he's done. That house is so cute. So the best thing about it is that we took this old, ugly house that was hardly any value. The tax value on that house today, I just did a presentation on this a couple months ago, $72,000. Wow. Remember, he bought it for 50, so he now has equity in his home, you know, sweat equity. The city doesn't have an eyesore, and there's so many good things. I get goosebumps when I think about it. So I'm able to like make money through my IRA tax deferred. Number two, you know, we basically helped this community have a better house, and we gave a family that, you know, wouldn't be able to buy a home. They have a home and they made it great. So I love that story. So if y'all are interested, go pick up Ken Corsini's book, Profit Like a Pro. And I am chapter 12, and you can read exactly how I did it and everything. So I know I love those pictures. So, but yes, and $5,000, you know, and the thing is, I have another story about an IRA that I used on another property. And it only cost me $100. So should I just jump into that, or do you want to ask some questions about that last deal?
Well, I was just going to say, a lot of times people think that in order to do seller financing or to get involved in investment, they have to have a ton of money. So not that $5,000 isn't a lot of money to some people. The next story you tell about $100, obviously most people can probably find $100. You know, you need to know what you're doing. Obviously, I'm sure you talked to your financial advisor, and in New York, yes, you are an attorney state. So you mentioned the title company. We also have the attorneys that go along with our transactions a lot.
Yeah. And I'm really, so my specialty since 2018, I've talked about this particular story, and then I've done other deals with my husband, he needed to open one. I started using my SAP. Because for a self-employed person, it's not like I have somebody contributing to my 401k. So we have started just, you know, using all of these ways to buy properties. So I will let your viewers still know this, that I actually wrote, and they can get it for free, an ebook that I put together, and it's about how to get started investing with a small dollar IRA, because that is kind of my specialty, small dollar being anything under 50,000. Now, if you have more than 50,000, hey, you know, you can buy properties, you can become a private money lender, but more people have, you know, the 5,000. And the thing is, if it's with a custodial company, it can be one of those educational accounts, a Cloverdale. It can be a health savings account. It can be a Roth, a SEP. So there's, you know, you can, I mean, some people are using their educational one to put their kids through private school. You know what I mean? So, and it's tax deferred. You do have to pay for it, you know, but there's certain ways you can structure it. And yes, a disclaimer, not a CPA and not attorney and not a financial advisor. So these, what I'm telling you is based on my own personal experiences and what I've personally done. So.
Well, and it's good to hear somebody that has actually gone through and done it, because I've heard that you can invest those ways, but to actually know somebody, have a conversation with somebody, or listen to somebody who's done it, just adds that value there.
Well, and the thing is if you do it right, there's really very, I mean, there's always risk in real estate. I'm not going to sit here and say there's not, but if you do your due diligence, your IRA money is backed and secured by real estate, because in these deals, my IRA is first lien position. I have other stories about how we became private money lenders, and we've helped other people become private money lenders, where basically you use the money in your self-directed IRA to, you know, buy a property or lend money out. So that's a whole nother, you know, topic or whatnot. But let me talk about my next really good deal, because I think this really secured it. I was like, dang, this is the way to go. So I happen to be, I can't take credit that I just, you know, there are people that told me it's taken, you know, 3.5 years, but you get the little pieces, because you're like, oh, I didn't know I could do that. So I was on another, I was on a webinar, and I backstage, I was talking about this property that I was getting, and I was like, dang, and I had my SEP IRA was already tied up in a couple other properties, because the cool thing with the way I invest is you can have more than one property. Your IRA can own more than one property. So there's some different rules and things like that. So I was like, man, I wish I could figure out how to buy this property in my IRA, but I just didn't have enough. So here's the details. Someone brought me a deal, and the purchase price was $70,000. Now, this was in a secondary market that I invest in a lot. And I have people who have self-directed IRAs that loan me money. So they'll loan me money. I negotiate the interest rate with them, you know, and that kind of thing. So that's another way. So one person had 40 and one person had 30. So that was my 70,000. I was going to owner finance this property. I already had a buyer lined up. So owner finance just means that they're going to give me a large down payment, and then they're going to make monthly payments, kind of just like the first deal, except this was higher numbers. So I don't have it all in front of me. So if I make a mistake here on the calculations, forgive me, but I'm going to give you the overview. So anyway, had private money lenders. So I closed on the property with my private money lenders at a title company. So got that done. And then a week later, I sold the property for $115,000. I sold to my end buyer. My end buyer paid me $11,500. That was her 10%. And her monthly payment was right around $900, including, not including taxes. So her father was helping her. And so he was paying the taxes, the property taxes. So we have property taxes here in Texas.
We do too.
So, yeah. So, but I was like, okay, so I knew what all the numbers were going to be. And I was like, man, how can I get this into my IRA? So I was on a webinar. And so one of the people backstage said, well, Nancy, use an option. I don't know what that is. What is that? So, oh my gosh, I don't even know why they don't teach this in school. So what it is I took $100 from my SEP IRA, and I'm a broker here in Texas. And I went on our, you know, Texas Real Estate Commission looking for that option agreement. It doesn't exist. And I literally had to Google it and put it together, but it's called an option agreement. Completely legal. I mean, it worked, because I'm not saying I'm an attorney, but this is how I bought the property. So I took the $100, and what happened was I did an option agreement where I was saying that my $100 SEP, so my SEP IRA account, was taking an option on the contract of the original purchase of the $70,000. So I know this is going to be confusing. So I didn't have to put out any money, the $100. And it's very simple. I did an amendment to the contract that changed the name of the buyer. So typically when I put a property under contract, I always put my LLC. Well, the contracts here in Texas, you can assign the contract or you just do an amendment. And I changed the name from my LLC to my SEP IRA. And the way it works is our company is called Quest Trust Company here. And the way it literally read was KBN Homes LLC was the original purchaser, my LLC. Changed name to Quest Trust Company FBO for the benefit of Nancy Wallace Lobb's SEP IRA account number. That was all there was. $100 was wired from my SEP account to the title company. And now my LLC was not going to own this property. My IRA owns the property. It's that easy. Now, to even make the deal sweeter, because I was actually selling the property. It had some repairs that I didn't make. So I discounted the price of the home to the buyer, but I said, hey, I'm giving you kind of a good discount. So I'm going to have you reimburse me. So remember, I use private money lenders to buy the property. And I had closing costs when I did that, which actually did have to come out of my SEP IRA. Because when you do these deals, all the money, there's no money from like Nancy. It all has to be in the, you know, there's like IRS rules and all that. Right. So I think my closing costs were right around $37.25, something like that. So I already paid for the property, but then my buyer had to reimburse me my closing costs from when I purchased the property. So my only cost in the property was the $100 I used as my SEP, because her payment that I was receiving into my SEP, the $900, I had negotiated a really good deal with my private money lender. So my payment to them every month was like $460. Remember, her payment was going to be like $900. And so I was keeping the difference of $550 into my SEP IRA every month. So
let me just stop you 1 second, Nancy. So when the $900 came in and $400, it went to the hard money lenders. Did it have to come out of your SEP IRA to them?
The way you do this to avoid all of that is I put a loan servicing company in place. So the loan servicing company is the one who collects the money. They're like, think of them as the bank, the loan servicer. Like, I don't know, when you have a mortgage and you don't pay Wells Fargo, you pay, I don't know, PennyMac or whoever it is. So the buyer, the end buyer, pays the loan servicing company. The loan servicing company then takes the amount of money and sends one check to Quest Trust Company, because they're the ones, everybody has their account there. And then because they have directions, like the Quest Trust Company now says, okay, of this 900 and some dollars, this goes, because I had two private money lenders on there, two different account holders. So they got their share and then the remainder went into mine. So for me, it's seamless. I don't even see that money. I get a statement, I get a text, a deposit was made to your account. It couldn't be easier. And you're just sitting there going, yay. Now in this particular deal, because of the situation of the buyer and the father and everything, I wasn't interested really in holding this note for a long time. I'm at a certain age where, you know, I got to make the dollars while I have. So I had negotiated with them to refinance out in 18 months. Well, as it turned out, because of the interest rates and, you know, her credit got better and whatnot, she went ahead and refinanced out. When she refinanced out, I literally netted about $46,000 to my IRA. Now, let me just say something about that $46,000. Because there's flippers that make that kind of money, and I flipped houses too. But when you flip, the little secret that nobody ever wants to talk about is the taxes that you have to pay. I mean, you can try to, you know, deduct this and deduct that, but you still pay. So I don't really like that part of the flipping, especially when you get a certain age, you want to keep the most of your money. So that $46,000, like that was between the interest I earned and then the price between what I bought the house for and what, you know, she did. So that $46,000, the cool thing about it is I get to decide how I want to be taxed on it. And let me just explain that. So it just so happened that it closed this year in 2021. So that just a couple months ago. So that money went into my account. Now, I'm at a certain age that I can take distributions. So I don't worry about the penalty part of it. But, you know, but if I didn't, I just leave it in there. But if I flip the property, I would be taxed in 2021 for the whole, let's just say, call it 46,000 net profit. But because I put it in my SEP IRA, number one, I don't pay taxes on it until I withdraw it. Number two, who says I have to withdraw all of 46,000? I don't have to do that. Maybe I'm going to take out 10,000 in 2022, or maybe I'm going to leave it in there. Maybe I'm going to reinvest it. The thing is, I have control. So if I take it out later, or I don't take it all out in the same chunk, then I don't get taxed all at once. Now, you eventually will get taxed on it, right? But you can decide, okay, do I want taxed on all of it this year, next year? And it also depends on what you do with it. So I can literally, and I'm actually doing this right now, I'm buying another property because now I have more money in my SEP, right? So I've actually increased my SEP. I have a great down payment. Because of the types of properties I look for, you know, I can almost pay cash, but I can't. So, and the cool thing about buying them in self-directed IRA, so there's a couple rules. Number one, so my husband and I can buy properties together. So we have a property where, you know, he has a third, I have a third, and then like our IRAs, we have three separate IRAs and they each own a third of it. Now, I cannot be a private lender to myself, meaning that if I found a house, let's say it was $100,000 and I only have 50, I can't go to a bank and get the other 50. You know what I mean? Now, unless I do the option. So there's different rules and I won't get into all that because it's super boring. But but the thing is, I guess just the point is that you don't need a lot of money. That was my very first deal that I literally would say it's, you know, you hear about the $0 down. I've been doing this for a long time. And I was like, man, and that in itself was just monumental because we've been able to repeat that process over and over now with that just simple doing an option agreement. And who knew? And the thing is, I did have to Google it and I did have to, you know, create my own option agreement, which was a one pager. And I sent it over to the IRA custodial company. I was like, is this what you're talking about? And that's like, oh, there, that's perfect, Nancy. So, you know, it just had to have the right information so that my IRA could take ownership of that property.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So you had talked about flipping and having to pay tax and flip on the flip. So let me ask you this. If you bought a house that was flipped, could you do it through the SEP IRA, the repairs? You pay through the SEP IRA.
You could, but yes, that you can do that. I personally have not done that because there are fees involved with having your money, not money going in, but money going out. And they can be pretty steep. So let's say that your flip is taking, you know, a couple months and you have maybe, let's just say 8 to 10 different checks you have to send out for different vendors and things like that. So you have to put so number one, there's like a time lag and most contractors, most vendors want to get paid like yesterday. So usually it'll take a few days. So what will happen is you would have to put in the paperwork to your IRA custodial company. Hey, pay, you know, plumber Joe this much money. And then they're going to charge you for writing a check. So yes, you can. I haven't done that because just the amount of paperwork going back and forth just to do these deals sometimes can be overwhelming. Because when I've done these deals, I know the paperwork, but like I said, not all the players, like the title company might not be familiar or the buyer. And so there's a lot of back and forth with the title company and the custodial company. So the main thing with investing with a self-directed IRA is that you have to be with a company that allows it. Like if you have a Fidelity 401k, then they don't allow it. I mean, you can buy other things with your IRAs, but you know, I just know about real estate. But if you wanted to just open up like a health savings account or a SEP account, you know, just Google, you know, custodial IRA companies in your area, because there's a bunch of them. I mean, there's hundreds of companies out there, so.
That's good to know. Yeah, I like I said, I have heard of it. I remember looking into it a couple years ago and then life took me in a different direction and I kind of got sidetracked. So yeah. It's nice to talk to you to have that kind of refresh and brought back. I know one time I sold a home and that home was in an IRA.
Yes.
So there was additional paperwork that had to get done in order to sell it, and yes, you know, the title work and stuff. So
yeah,
and that was just the way the family had bought the home, I think. You know, they put it in the IRA.
Yeah. So I mean, it's just, I think it's just a good vehicle that they don't talk about. It's so, I feel that it's less risky than the stock market, because I mean, real estate, no matter, even though it goes up and down, it's usually a very sound investment. It's an appreciating investment. And just think about it. If you had a health or educational account for your child when they were like two, you know, I have grown children, so I don't know how they work anymore. And then you bought a piece of real estate in that child's, you know, and just think of the value for their college, you know what I mean? With the cost of college and everything. So, but I like it for the fact that we've actually been able to do well in building our, you know, feeling more solid with the, you know, my husband has a 401k and it's taken a hit, you know, over and over again. So we're like, move that money out. And I will say this, like, we don't earn interest. Most people in a self-directed IRA, they don't earn anything. So your money's just sitting there anyway. And you probably are paying quarterly fees to have the company manage it. So why not learn about how to put it to use? And even if you don't want to invest in real estate, you can become a passive investor. There's, I mean, be careful, do your due diligence, but there's a lot of like multifamily syndications where you can use your IRA. Just again, do your due diligence. You know, don't just, you know, do it because your friend is doing it or what, you know, do your due diligence. I always tell my private money lenders, you know, go look at the property if you can. Don't just trust that somebody's, you know, I had somebody reach out to me about me being their private money lender from my IRA. And he was a new investor. I mean, just brand new. And I typically won't lend to new investors because, no offense, I mean, we all got to start somewhere, but not with my money.
I hear you. But to your point, anything that you do in real estate, whether you're buying, you're selling, you're investing, it's up to you to do your due diligence. You know, New York, we teach that it's a buyer beware state. As a buyer, make sure that you, you know, trust the people that are working with you to help you buy that property. If you're an investor, know who you're, you know, I had a saying, I don't want to say it on here, but basically know who you're working with. Right.
It's all about having that, you know, I said that I do secondary markets. Well, I can't be there all the time. And I do have a trusted boots on the ground, but that takes time. And in the beginning, I did go to those secondary markets because, number one, I wanted to understand what I was, you know, marketing to and get a feel for it. And so, you know, just another story, we found a lake house driving for dollars in a place called Granbury, Texas. Here, it's a cute little town. You know, it's like the number one small town of United States or something like that. Anyway, we were doing driving for dollars. We just happened to be down there because I love driving for dollars. If you don't know what that is, that's, you know, that's another YouTube video. and so now we're starting to market in that area because I'm familiar with it and that kind of thing. So if you're in a very competitive market, you know, kind of look outside, you know. Some of my criteria is that there has to be at least a population of 10,000. There has to be at least one or two, you know, what's the employment? Because if the one place shuts down, where's everybody going to go? You know, because we kind of face that with the oil industry. But there's a couple Tyson, you know, they're in a couple places here. So, I mean, I think we're all safe with, you know, Tyson sticking around for a while. So hopefully. But, you know, so there's some rules. And when I say driving for dollars, I literally mean that because we'll go out and we'll say, okay, what do we want to invest here? Do we want to invest here? So I get a kind of a feel for the community before I start going in there. And then after you've been doing it for a while, you know, you just kind of get that, not, I won't say sense or gut, because I don't want to lead anybody. I still run numbers and stick to business. Like, especially new investors, what happens? They get so excited about the deal. And I was with that too. I was like, hey, you know, but just, you know, like in a really crazy market like this, you know, don't overspend just because you want to get in the game. I mean, just don't do it. It's just
emotional. You don't, they get to that point where they don't want to lose. It's more important to win the deal than to know if the deal makes
sense. Exactly. And hey, I'm, you know, one of the most competitive people you're going to meet. And so when I go talk to a seller and I find out somebody else has been there and I'm like, okay, how can I make this better? You know, I'm like, you know, but, you know, over the years you just go, okay, the bottom line is I have to make money. I don't want to lose money. I want to make money. And, you know, I haven't always been successful. I mean, you know, we've talked about partners and things like that. And, you know, if you're going to have a partner, make sure you're on the same page about, you know, how to do a reno or how to, you know, even find properties. But I did have a couple of years ago, I did have a, so it's not all roses. I just want to tell you, even the best of us make mistakes. Now I will say I went to a closing at a favorite title company and he's like, well, you're not saying much today. I was like, yeah, I'm not saying much when I have to bring, you know, $1,500 to the table. You know. So, I mean,
it happens and you learn from it, you know,
you do. Yeah. And fortunately we haven't, the worst one we had is we bought a house. I will give a tip for the investors that are listening out there. Cause I see this question on Facebook all the time where you buy a home and the seller wants a lease back, or maybe there's a tenant in there. And with the eviction moratorium, here's what I'm telling you. Cause I did this two houses back to back. So the first one I got a little burned. And so what I decided was, you know what, I'm not going to do that anymore. So I started holding back. So the owner will still get it, the seller will get it. But I started holding back $10,000 in escrow fees if there's somebody living in the house until that person is out. Because we had a situation where, you know, it was a probate lead. We bought the house from the mom. Mom moved out. Daughter was there. We didn't know that she had tons of drug. I mean, just, it was just awful. And they ended up trashing and stealing all the copper, all the wiring, the water heater. I mean, they literally left a shell of the house. I mean, we were going by it and we couldn't do anything because, and unfortunately this was before COVID. But we had to evict her, and it was and I've been in property management for a long time. And, this was the first time. I mean, we had CPS there. We had, the police department there. I mean, it was just a mess. She had destroyed that house so much that our plan was to do owner financing and needed so many repairs. We ended up selling it to a wholesaler. So I didn't make as much money. We bought it subject to, you know, so we didn't have a lot of money out front. But so learned my lesson on that house. So the next time I had a tenant in there, I was like, great, don't mind. You know, we made a deal and everything. But I tell you what, because it's your tenant, I'm going to hold back $10,000. And my title company does that. They hold it in escrow. It's not I get the funds. And then I go into a walkthrough, and if there's any damage or anything like that, I deduct it from that $10,000. So far, that's been a winning scenario because now the owners are vested, the seller is vested in you getting the property back. So, and if the seller doesn't want to do it, I don't want to buy the house. I mean, it's just, especially with the, I don't know about you guys, but I think our eviction moratorium is ending in June. I heard that it might be extended, but the courts are so backed up. You're going to be lucky to go to eviction court next by the end of the year.
Yeah, that's how we are here in New York too. So, but I got to tell you, I wasn't sure, you know, I watched your YouTube videos. I knew you had a lot of information to share. I'd love to have you back on the show maybe a couple more times this year just to give that the input. And Texas and New York are very, very similar states sometimes with real estate. I have a friend in McKinney that I talked to, and I actually did a coaching program, and she's out towards Texas as well. The coach that I had. So, and we compared Texas and New York, and there was a lot that was the same. So it's a good state.
I don't know that we have the same eviction laws though. It takes a little bit longer in New York state to yeah.
I don't even know if you can. No, you can.
I don't think I would be. So Texas has very friendly landlord laws. I mean, very friendly. I am proud to say that through my property management, and if any, you know, I have like checklists, we could talk property management all day long. But, one of the things that I found out was that it's all about the screening process and setting the expectations. Right. So we had very few, like I always tell people, hey, if you're looking to hire a property manager, ask them this one question. And that question is, what is your eviction ratio? Because a lot of them probably don't even know. But ours was like 1% or less, which I'm proud to say. I don't know all the ins and outs of eviction court because I didn't have to go there that often. Not that tenants didn't leave, but we tried to minimize the damage to owners when, you know, tenants, they'll lose their job. They'll get a divorce. Just
life happens, but a lot of times you're right. If you screen them, then that's the best part. So, well, thank you for your time today, Nancy. I appreciate it.
Hopefully you're so welcome.
And if they have questions, that you guys, anybody can message me, and I can pass that along. Or
yes.
you know, Nancy, if you want, I can add some contact information for you after we're done. I can add that to the post as well. So
okay, that'd be great. Really appreciate it. Well, so nice to talk to you, and you know, enjoy it. I'll look forward to being on again.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's it for this week's episode of Real Estate I Love It. Be sure to subscribe and leave a review on whatever stream platform you're using for your podcast. See you next time.